be just to the U.S. first, because obviously it's going to be a very big week in the U.S. with the election coming up. But just going back over this past week, some of the data reads. I mentioned last week that we were going to get the favorite number of the president coming out, and that was the GDP number for Q3. Well, it didn't disappoint. You know, Q3 GDP in the U.S. Had its biggest ever rebound. You know, in annualized terms, it was up 33.1%. That was after falling 31.4% going back the quarter before. The inside that GDP were the signs that, you know, this can't last. It was driven by a huge lift in real consumption spending. Real consumer spending lifted by 40.7% on an annualized basis. And it was mostly spending on goods, because services far more problematic, even in the U.S., over the course of those last few months. So when they had that surge in income, which was there with the additions to unemployment benefit relief, which actually disappeared going back over a month ago, and is still deadlocked there in Congress, what they did was they went out and spent on cars, washing machines, anything that they could upgrade, and that fed through into manufacturing as well. There was that big surge we saw running through housing as well. And you know, that was the story behind the huge surge in Q3 GDP. Obviously, it's going to run into some difficulty now as we run into Q4, because income support, it's still not there. It's going to be problematic. And you know, even the election this week is not going to resolve that. I'll go into that in a minute for the reasons why that's not the case. Some of the other numbers we got last week, still holding up okay in the United States, although there's just the hint of a turn down now in new housing. So we had September new home sales came out. Market thought they would rise yet again by 2.8%. This is the first time we've had a soft housing indicator. New home sales actually fell by 3.5%, still off a very, very high peak, so still by no means soft. But perhaps the canary in the coal mine with this one, you know, what might happen. Consumer confidence still holding up, not quite as good or as might have been expected. The consumer confidence survey for the month of October was expected to rise to 102.5. It actually settled back to 100.9 from 101.3 going back the month before. So that slight settling back there, just slightly concerning. Also, another housing indicator that didn't turn out quite so well was September pending home loan sales. That came out later in the week and actually fell by 2.2%. The market was looking for a 4.5% rise in that. Yeah, it has been bolting along. So yeah, just that hint of what may come. And then we move into this week, and of course we've got this terribly fractious U.S. election coming on Tuesday. We'll start to see the results from that election coming through our time very late on Wednesday, well after the market closes, but more into Thursday. And what they're hoping is that it's a clear result one way or the other. If it's at all stuck in the middle, then yeah, and it takes weeks before we know what's happening, yeah, that obviously is going to feed what already is looking pretty nasty in the U.S. As many people have reflected, you know, U.S. elections usually are carnival events. Yeah, everybody's happy. They go out, they have cupcakes, and God knows what else as they go into U.S. elections. Not this time. People are abandoning the streets. They're putting up boards on their premises. They're expecting real trouble. So you know, this one is looking, you know, sort of very much different from what we've seen in the past. The other parts about it is the pre-polling is just off the planet. 91 million have pre-polled. Not quite sure what all that means yet until we start to see some of those results coming through. But watching that one very, very carefully. And in any case, whatever happens, in the case of the US, we have this problem. Hasn't been a problem in the past, but it will be a problem this time, in that the president doesn't go or stay, depending on the election result, you have what is termed the caretaker president, who runs all the way through from election day to inauguration day. So say, for example, that the president loses the election, then he's still the president for the next 2 months, supposedly in a caretaker role. He's not supposed to take major decisions. And that's until inauguration day for the new president, which comes through in the middle of January. So we have this two-month strange phase. Only occurs in the US. Normally it doesn't matter because we haven't got the huge divisions running through the country that we have at the moment. So yeah, that's another area of uncertainty that needs to be watched as we go through. It pales the economic data that comes out this week, or the Fed's decision. You know, so we got the Fed meeting later in the week. They're not expected to change anything except keep things very, very easy and reaffirm that. And the election will give them every reason to reaffirm that, because at the time they actually come out with their decision, they probably won't know what the result of the election is. It's Thursday morning our time, very early for the Fed decision. So they're likely to leave the cash rate where it is and just reaffirm that nothing's changing there. It's going to be very, very easy. They'll buy whatever they need to buy in terms of quantitative easing, and that's going to go on for a long, long time to come. At the very end of the week, we get non-farm payrolls. Maybe the market will take notice of that. The history of this so far has been that at least that's been turning out better than expected. And we've seen the unemployment rate come down more rapidly than expected in the United States. That's expected to occur again. And non-farm payrolls are expected to rise about 600,000, a little less than the previous month, and the unemployment rate to come down to 7.6 from 7.9%. So watching all that, but it's still probably going to be a volatile start to the week. If by some chance we get a very clear result, and that's a possibility, because it could be that all those battleground states they talk about, the electoral college votes, that they may swing one way. And if they do, that would be the best of all outcomes, and the uncertainty might start to fade very, very rapidly as we go into the later part of the week. But we need to see exactly what comes through with that result. China last week had both its October manufacturing PMI came out, services sector PMI, both okay. They're going okay at this point. So manufacturing PMI came out 51.4, just a touch lower than 51.5, going back to the previous month. The services sector PMI has actually risen to 56.2. It's a good result from 55.9. So the Chinese economy is still coming through reasonably well, although it's less important than it has been, because they're still in the process of picking fights with everybody at the moment in terms of trade relationships. They'll get the cakes in services, both the cakes in manufacturing PMI and the cakes in services PMI coming out this week. They're expected to be reasonable too. The manufacturing PMI out later this week, the cakes in one should be 53, same as the month before. And the October cakes in services sector PMI, which was at 54.8, will probably improve on that, maybe go a bit above 55 when that comes out later in the week. So little data out of China, but what does come out looks pretty good. Last week in Australia, we had the third quarter CPI came out, and it had that huge rebound quarter on quarter, all because of petrol prices and people having to pay for childcare again. So after falling 1.9% quarter on quarter, going back to Q2, it rose by 1.6% quarter on quarter. And the annual inflation rate went from minus 0.3% to plus 0.7%. We'll start to settle from here. We won't have those huge changes in certain prices. And it'll settle more into line with the underlying inflation rates. And the trim mean weighted median They came in at 0.3, 0.4% respectively. That's about where we'd expect to see these numbers settling over the next few quarters. And that's consistent with inflation still just above 1%, between 1 and 2%. And that's exactly where those underlyings were. The trim mean, for example, was 1.2% year on year going back to Q2. It stayed at 1.2% year on year for Q3. You're belying all that volatility in the headline number. And the weighted median was 1.3% in Q2. It stayed at 1.3% year on year in the second quarter. So, the CPI will eventually start to reflect that as well. And I'd expect it to sort of mean revert towards those underlyings as we go a little bit further ahead. We had some export price information, import price information in Q3. They were both very weak because we started to see the pull-off of some of those commodity prices, notably the oil price. So export prices fell by 5.1% quarter on quarter, down 9.9%. Import prices down 3.5% and are down 5.7% year on year, mostly to do with oil prices on those ones. And the other figure of interest was probably September private sector credit. It rose by 0.1%, but the driving part of it, now in total credit, housing is actually rising quite well again. We've seen housing finance approvals starting to lift very, very strongly, and it's now starting to come in the stock of housing credit. So the housing credit number announced by the Reserve Bank was up 0.4% month on month, 3.3% year on year. So you're getting some pretty clear evidence here that, you know, housing is actually doing a fair bit better than expected. We got it again over the weekend with the auction clearance rates, which are running around 75% average for both Melbourne and Sydney. So, starting to do relatively well, really, as far as housing is concerned. And the reports we're getting from the banks, too, that as they're taking people off home loan holidays, they're not experiencing too much difficulty at this point. It's tending to go a lot more smoothly than widely feared. So, that part of it appears to be going pretty well too. We'll get a little bit more evidence on this early this week because we've got housing finance data coming out later today in ABS credit data. Last month, owner-occupier housing finance commitments lifted 13.6% month on month. Investor housing finance is virtually dead in the water, but owner-occupiers housing finance is taking off, largely driven by first-time home buyers. We're seeing quite a deal of strength running through housing finance commitments at this point out of the owner-occupier space, taking over from the investor push that we got going back a year ago. We also get September home building approvals, and these are expected to be okay, up about 1.3% after falling 1.6% going back the month before. Tomorrow we'll get the Reserve Bank meeting, and generally everybody expects that we're going to see a 15 basis point cut in the cash rate to 0.1%. I think everybody expects too that the three-year bond target will come down to 0.12. It's virtually there now. Those two, in terms of term funding facility, you may remember that going back last month, they extended that a little bit in terms of its scope. They probably won't do much with that this time around. I don't think they'll need to touch those things this time around. They won't need to announce too much more on quantitative easing. It's just getting those rates down to levels which they think are super accommodative to help the process which has already started here, particularly being led by the housing sector. On Wednesday, we get September retail sales and third quarter real retail sales. We've already had the preliminary report on that, and the expectation is that September retail sales probably fell 1.5% after being down 4%. The month before that was a huge lift, and there was a lift the month before that. So the third quarter real retail sales are expected to lift by 6% quarter on quarter. That was after falling 3.4% going back the quarter before. We get September international trade coming out on Thursday. We expecting that to improve to $4.5 billion trade surplus. We've already had preliminary export data, which showed quite a big lift in the month. That was from $2.6 billion, the trade surplus going back the month before, so that one looking reasonably positive too. And on Friday, the quarterly monetary policy statement, which will be full of a range of economic forecasts, because one thing the RBA is pressing at this point is they're not prepared to take anything at face value at this point. They accept that things are turning out a lot better than their forecasts implied going back 3 months ago. But yeah, they still believe there's some risks out there that could pull those back. They expect it still to be very, very bumpy. You know, they're watching with some concern what's happening overseas. So you'll find that, you know, they'll have a baseline forecast which may show some slight improvement from going back the previous quarter. But you know, with a lot of emphasis on the potential for things to go in either direction, either better or worse than expected. So you know, they really are sort of taking every single option in terms of their forecasts at the moment, and they're in no mind to do anything other than keep monetary policy very, very easy for a long time to come. In Europe, last week, we had October business and consumer confidence still holding up, which is a surprise. You know, that it's a bit early in that survey though to pick up, you know, all the latest changes there, which are truly, you know, so unfortunately a lot of countries there starting to go back to much tighter restrictions. Blanket shutdown again in the UK is there in France. Germany's doing the same. Spain, Italy. Yeah, they're all starting to cut back again with this big resurgence in COVID-19 that's occurred in Europe and of course, in the US, except the US is ignoring it for the time being. So, you know, that obviously is going to have some impact on economic numbers as we go ahead, pulling them back. The ECB held on for this last meeting. They had a meeting last week. But you know, they'll probably look at ways in which they can ease further over coming meetings. The unemployment rate only ticked up to 8.3% from 8.1%, but you know, I expect that European unemployment is going to go up more than that over coming months. And Q3 GDP now looks like ancient history. They had the preliminary Q3 GDP. It was stronger than expected. Quarter on quarter, it was up 12.7%. If you annualise that the US way, up over 50% annualised. That compares with minus 11.8%, so it had a pretty good bounce, and the year-on-year improved to minus 4.3% from minus 14.7% going back the previous quarter. The only problem is it's obvious that can't last in Europe because Q4 is now going to be a horrible quarter with the new lockdowns that are occurring in Europe, so some pullback running through that as we look ahead. This week out of Europe, got some investor confidence numbers, which will probably come back. They were down minus 8.3 going back last month. Manufacturing PMI still holding up. This is a story all the way around the world that the new spending that occurred through Q3 was on goods. Everywhere, they experienced the same thing, including here in Australia, where there was a huge resurgence of retail sales. You know, people got temporary lifts in their income from government income supports. They couldn't use services in the way that they had. In some cases, like travel, it was very restricted. So they compensated by buying goods. And so we've seen this all the way around the world, that spending on actual physical goods has surged. And as a result of that, your manufacturing got a very significant boost everywhere. So these manufacturing PMIs are reflecting that. And even in Europe, the October manufacturing PMI at 54.4 is expected to hold up around about that level. The services sector PMI, 46.2, it might start to come back before long. And some retail sales data towards month end for September, that probably came back after a surge going back the month before, up 4.4%. But this week, you know, it's all about that US election. The results that come out of it, watching it fairly carefully, it's all to do with the And US elections are weird things. If you went back to 2016, the Democrats in that election won the popular vote by over 3 million. The problem is the Electoral College is highly undemocratic. So most of the Democrats' votes are there in California and New York. They do have big numbers of Electoral College votes, but not really reflecting their massive populations, whereas the smaller Midwest states get way overrepresented in terms of Electoral College votes compared with population, the so-called battleground states. And so that's why, you know, a party can win massively the popular vote and still lose massively in the election. And so watching that with some care as we go through the course of this week.